welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and it's a Tuesday, which means it's an MLS-centric day. But not just MLS, we've got some GA Cup, we've got some CONCACAF Champions Cup. With me to talk about that and much, much more is a man who would never let himself get on Wilfred Nancy's bad side. It's Joe Lowry. Hello, Joe.
I'm too afraid to. Like, Wilfred Nancy is so nice. He seems like such a cool guy. I just don't want to disappoint him. More than anything. Every time I talk with Wilfred Nancy, I'm like, wow, you are just way cooler than me. I don't want to have a misstep. Cucho Hernandez, you better watch yourself, son.
That is kind of my operating assumption, Joe, is that if you got the I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed from your parents,
crush me.
It would upset you. If
it
were
Nancy,
it would crush you.
Yes, very exactly. Much so. Yeah, I'm not messing with Wilfred Nancy. Wilfred, come on the show sometime. You seem cool.
Yes.
There we go. And rounding out the crew is a man you just heard who now does 999 different things instead of the even 1,000. It's David Goss. Hello, David.
Yeah, I'm down one, but I'm right where I want to be. I'm just looking forward to getting through a podcast with recording without crying, but that would be a new experience for me over the last week.
Ah, I wasn't sure if you were going to go with crying or just getting through an actual podcast experience, since you are recording on your phone, but also on your computer and maybe using smoke signals simultaneously.
And as nervous as I am about it, I don't think I even get close to Joe's anxiety watching it all go down from afar.
It's been a morning. I'd like people need to understand that.
A slight peek behind the curtain. Joe is always the one who I think is most on a time frame, a schedule. He's very good at these things. And there does come a point in recording or in the pre-record process when you can see Joe just start to bounce a little bit. Like, all right, are we going to get to this ever? Like, I've got 400 other things to do.
Well, it's a 50-50 as to whether we get over that hump and start recording or whether you guys break me and I just accept my new reality. And today, I'm actually not too sure which side we hit of that coin today. What I do want to say, to go back, it's been a little tongue-in-cheek. For folks that haven't gone and listened to David's last episode of Extra Time, go do it, because not only was it just a good episode talking about soccer, but it was a really cool moment, and sort of you could feel how important, Goss, like, that show has been to you and the folks that have been on that show. Weeby in your relationship, like, just as someone who really cares about the sport in this country, I'm speaking for myself. It was a hard listen, but also a really, really good listen, almost encouraging in a weird sense, because it shows how important and how well you've stewarded so much of your work over there. And so I'm still bummed for you, and I'm disappointed that that's not going to go on for another 10 years, like, genuinely, because it's just not going to be the same. You can talk to those guys and they'll tell you the exact same thing, but you handled it with complete class. I texted you that. We've talked about this already, but you handled everything like a pro. So folks, go listen to it. Goss was a consummate professional as always.
And I'll just echo those statements and then add, when it first became like possible to have Goss on the show more regularly, my first reaction was like, are you sure? Like it didn't feel like we were up to the standard, because Goss has been doing MLS coverage for so long and doing it so well. He is a like formative voice for me in a lot of ways when it comes to covering the league and talking about the league. It's him. It's Weeby. It's Doyle. There are other names in there as well. But I think you've been so important to the way the league is discussed and covered. So to have you on this program has like truly been an honor and a privilege, and I'm really happy that you continue to do it, and also that Joe has someone to talk about Major League Soccer with that isn't me, because I do my best and definitely try to watch games and try to be up on it, but I certainly do not have your into-the-weeds nerddom that the two of you can sort of bond over on these episodes. So it's lovely to have you here, Goss. It's I'm just very thankful to have you here, both of you here, obviously. You are doing 90 things, as I said. So you're in Florida doing GA Cup now, is that right?
Yeah, I'm finishing out with Generation Adidas Cup, which is obviously a huge passion of mine. Thank you for what both of you said. I hate both of you right now, but I'll get over it in a little bit. And obviously what you guys talked about is like growing the game, growing the sport in this country. And for me, youth development has always been at the forefront of that. And 10 years ago, when I started doing Extra Time, I also started doing Generation Adidas Cup, and it was me sitting at a folding table in a corner by myself. And like most of the coaches and teams didn't know I was there. And so to come where we've come, where, and a lot of this credit goes to one of my good friends, Abner Aceves, who was part of the video and production team at MLS and worked in events and now has gone on to bigger and better things, of seeing the future of like the college draft, the way the NFL does it, that's not what we do. This is the future of soccer in this region. This is the future of Major League Soccer. So to be able to build it up where it's like You've got international teams begging to come. Flamengo wants to bring the next Vinicius to this tournament to prove that he's good enough in the world. You've got South Korean teams. The K-League sent a representative here with their team to see how youth development works in America and in Canada. And then you get to see these players get treated like superstars at this age and be trained for the pressures that are coming, which I think is where a lot of players have failed. And I'm a small part of that, but it's like kind of the perfect way for me to finish this off is sort of where I started. And so I'm really excited about that. And I just wanted to say real quick, I appreciate to anyone who reached out to me over the last 4 or 5 days. It has been overwhelming, unexpected, and has breathed new life into me because I was sort of burnt out and done. And I think you could feel a lot of it on the show. And you mentioned the emotional connection personally to Weeby and Doyle and Kaylin and Anders and Maria and everyone else we've had as hosts. I didn't mention Sam Stajko when I did the show, who is guest host at times, because I hate Sam. Yeah. Just like I hate both of you.
That's the correct opinion. That's fine.
But all the other people I've worked with, and there was all of that, but just to hear how much it's meant to people. I mean, I got messages from people saying, like, I didn't know MLS and I got into it and you've helped guide me through that, or I liked the World Cup and then I watched an MLS game and I got into it, or I met friends through it. All of these things that are like overwhelming and incredible. So I'm glad it's meant anything to anyone. But I think at some point we have to stop having emotional shows about soccer and we should just have fun and talk about soccer.
Maybe we should. But I'll just add one more thing. I think anytime you hear people earnestly and passionately discussing a topic, it's always going to be that much more interesting. It could be, I don't know, like choir singing and how they got into the choir. I had that conversation with someone not long ago.
And I was like, that definitely feels like a real life example. There's no way you just picked choir. Because it's like,
how did you get in? How did you audition? What piece did you sing? Did you got an impromptu thing? How did you know how to sing? Like, I think anytime a person starts talking about their authentic self in an authentic way, it's always going to resonate more. And I feel like a lot of those conversations, like the ones that I remember listening to, like as soon as they came out, were when Bobby was still there. And it was just you all, like, obviously being friends, being buddies, talking a little bit of trash, but also for people getting really interested. I always joke about like Houston's third choice right back. And is he going to be good enough in this situation? But that is a specific moment from a specific show y'all did. And I think that had to bring more interest to the league, to the game, just because anytime you get that level of conversation and that level of insight, but also energy, I think it's going to pull people in and appeal. So hopefully we can bring a little bit of that to this show and this episode of this show. But I did want to ask you about GA Cup more than just what type of table you are now sitting at. How do you cover a tournament that has so many different teams, so many different age groups, so many different potential matches to watch? Are you just sort of constantly roaming around head on a swivel?
Also, before you answer Taylor's question, Goss, explain in 12 seconds and then answer Taylor's question what GA Cup is.
Thanks for doing a better job hosting, Joe.
So the Generation Adidas Cup is a tournament that every MLS Academy is invited to every year at the U17 and U15 levels, which right now is what MLS considers as their pro pathway levels for each club. And then they invite a bunch of international teams to come and compete. So it's not the national championships, which MLS has taken over since COVID when the DA fell apart and became MLS Next. That's a different competition where you'll see like soccer's from Chicago and PDA from New Jersey and Bethesda and clubs like that, that a lot of us grew up playing around or playing in or other people know or their kids play in. But this is only MLS teams at those two age groups playing in a tournament. So it's group stage and then into the knockouts. International teams that come, River Plate comes. We've seen Julian Alvarez and Enzo Fernandez play in this tournament in the past. There's a Korean team this year. There are teams that have come from Africa, obviously across Europe, Central America, and then South America. So that's what the tournament is. We broadcast 4 games a day. So I'm on half or all of those broadcasts. So I'm obviously locked into those games. And then besides that, it's a cool space where it's a place where, like what Taylor just talked about, it's a lot of people doing the thing they love and talking about the thing they love. And it's just wandering around and talking to people and be like, who should we go watch? Who's worth going to see, whether it's a player or a team? There's been a really cool thing that's happened over the last 10 years, which is like every year a new club emerges, and emerges as in takes it seriously or finds an identity or shifts things. And it was Columbus last year. It was Seattle before that. It's been Orlando over the last few years as well. Of course, Red Bulls and Dallas were early to that scene. NYCFC coming on, LAFC as an expansion team. So that's always like an interesting way to go. And I think Houston is coming, which is really exciting if you're a soccer fan, because if you want to win a World Cup, if we're being honest, can we have this conversation actually? Can I sidebar us real quick?
I mean, Joe's already sort of unsure if he's going to be broken on this episode.
If you're being honest and you want a U.S. team to win a World Cup, which is not what everyone wants, so which is fine, should you not put every dollar that you have in youth development from like a federation side in L.A., Dallas, New York, and Miami, let the rest of the country figure it out and try and win a World Cup with players out of those four talent pools? You could throw a different city in instead of one of those, but the point being, like, Portugal and Croatia are potentially going to win World Cups off of Lisbon and off of Zagreb and Split alone.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. To be honest, I've never really considered whether fracturing the youth development landscape in a purposeful sense might actually be the best thing. I understand where you're coming from, but can you even pull that off from a PR perspective? Like, can you even say, hey, we're going to go out and do this? I don't think there's an actual feasible way to make that happen in a country like the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I agree on the PR side, but like taking that away and saying like from a soccer point of view, because if you did something like that, right, you would build five or six super clubs in each of those cities that play against each other every weekend. So instead of having LAFC travel to San Jose and play the Quakes on a weekend, they would just play all of their LA teams, which is kind of what happens in a Rio and a Lisbon.
Aren't you then sort of limiting, don't you, if you have such a small pool that is still a very large pool, but if you have six cities, six super clubs, they're all playing against each other, don't they learn to play against each other and with each other? And doesn't that sort of create not quite an incestuous pool, but basically, like, aren't you playing one way, one stylistic way to beat one type of opponent? Doesn't that potentially limit you from a stylistic competitive standpoint?
I think that's a great argument, because I think that's sort of what the K-League people are doing here, which is like, we've perfected our style, but we all play a homogenous way. I think that's probably the term we're looking for here. And so it's like, you don't have that other tool in your bag. You might have different styles in different cities. And again, I don't think this is right. I don't think it'll ever happen, but it's an interesting thought process, which is to come back around. That's sort of what I do here, is I just talk to people about ridiculous ideas around youth development, soccer, human development, and all things like that. I go and try and watch as many games as I can. And then as the group stage goes along, it's a lot of like, which are the games that matter? Which are the teams I haven't seen yet? Which are the players or teams that I'm hearing about? And so it's just constantly moving around and catching as much of games as you can. There is one specific ticket right now that everyone wants, which is Kevin Sullivan and the Philadelphia Union. He is, I would argue, as covered and fawned over of a young player as I've ever seen. Like,
yeah,
they had to pull the other MLS Next youth players away from the field for his first game because no one could walk around that field because they all wanted a picture of this kid who they play in a league with and they compete against. That's how big a name he is, and that's how big a story he is alone. So they're kind of always tune in for type stuff. And then going to see some of the other teams or checking in on guys that I've seen in the past that I'm curious to see how they're developing.
Other than Sullivan, any particular players that have stood out to you for whatever reason that you feel like are worth at least filing away in the back of our minds?
I think we're going to see a little bit more as we go along at the U17 level. We haven't really seen the top teams yet because of the way our schedule fell. And so I think that's obviously closer. I could say U15 players, but those are a few steps away. Although last year, a Red Bulls U15 is Julian Hall, who now plays in MLS. So I could be wrong. There's a six on the Red Bulls, Audrey Mamedi, who's playing up two age groups, I think. And I think he's as good at that position as any kid I've seen in a GA Cup ever. So I think that's really exciting for Red Bulls because that's a position they're successfully developed at. Mm. I'd say right now he's ahead of where Edelman was, but he's different than Tyler Adams. And so that's a big one, I think, when you look at, you know, for fans to say, like, what's coming next. Johnny Shore is here as well for NYCFC, who's a special player, but he's already played in Next Pro. A couple of the forwards on Houston, Di Morelli and Miles Gardner, were really impressive. And really fun to watch. So I think those. And then there's a center forward on Chicago Fire's U15s who a lot of people feel like is going to be the next Kevin Sullivan, which is ridiculous because Kevin is eligible for U15 competition right now, as well as his teammates. That Philly team, Neil Pierre, is like 6'4 already at center back as a 16-year-old, which is absurd and moves well. And Marlon LeBlanc, who's head coach of Philly 2 team, his son plays in that team and is really talented as well. And a center forward, Saidi, who's a youth national team captain. So there's a lot of good talent. I don't know that there's like a Gio Reyna and a Taha that's not Kevin that like pops out so far. And so it'll be interesting to see as it goes along. But I think what we're seeing so far and what I believe it was. Oh, so Felipe Luis, like the Felipe Luis, Atletico Madrid. He is the Flamengo
U17. Not Luis Felipe, but Felipe Luis.
Yeah, he's the Flamengo U17 coach. And so I went up to him yesterday. I was asking some questions before the game. And I'm like, what do you think so far? And it was, I did not expect this, which was, we've been surprised how hard the MLS teams compete. And I was like, what do you mean? And it sort of seemed like what I was getting was like a lot of Brazilian teams, when they face Flamengo and go down, that give up. And MLS players, he said, across the board, all 11, like stay in them and keep fighting and pushing and fighting and pushing, which is normally a concept that we've talked about MLS players struggling with, because foreign academies are more professionalized, quote unquote. It's more life or death for those players because of social and economic issues. And so I was fascinated to hear that. I don't know if it's the way he interprets it versus the way other people interpret a concept like that, but it was really surprising.
U.S. soccer fans who are like my father will very much enjoy that.
Yeah.
Because I think his favorite aspect of the USMNT was always, you know, how hard they work, that everybody's always pulling, everybody's always running. No matter what, they're always in it to the last minute. So that does feel sort of representative of U.S. teams of the past, but it's nice to know that that's not a bunch of U.S. players just quitting when they go 1-0 down to a Brazilian team. That's good.
My fun, or I think is a funny story, is I did a Sporting Club de Portugal game, because the Lisbon thing is a British thing, and they're like super not happy about it. So I did one of their games, and I have for each team like an alumni list just to like run through throughout the broadcast at some point of like, here are the famous players that came from this club. And the guy talking to me goes, so just so you know, like in our club, we're really focused on developing wingers. We like wingers who take guys on one on one. I go, yeah, I know. He goes, oh, did you talk to the coach already? I'm like, no. Figo, Ronaldo, Rafael Leao, Quaresma, Nani, like, no, I'm a human being on the planet. I know Sporting develops wingers because that's all you guys do.
David Goss has eyes. Breaking news. Goss, I'm so proud of you. I also love, you mentioned the Chicago Fire kid. It's encouraging for Fire fans, and I know there's a lot of reasons to be down on the Fire right now. It's just encouraging to think that by the time this kid is a pro in like 7 years, you guys might actually have a way to create chances on your own, or like have a playmaker or something like that. So there is something out there to look forward to, and I think that's a great thing.
That felt like an insult and a compliment at once.
Oh no.
Nicely Can I throw done, a real compliment in there, which is, so Gary Lewis has taken over Chicago Fire Academy, who came from Seattle, Philly, and Red Bull in the past, and their sole focus is on Chicago, which is sort of what I was talking about in the right way, not the wrong way, which is like, Chicago is good enough. Houston is good enough.
Not you good enough to be listed in your cities that you want to build youth super teams in.
They both.
I don't think Chicago got a nod from you, my friend.
That might be on the Chicago Fire. Like, instead of constantly being looking for players in Michigan and looking for players in Idaho and going to Vegas and Fresno and all these other places, both of those clubs are like, we are committed to trying to win our territory now and like focus on ours. And it's like, yeah, these cities are soccer powerhouses. And I think that's really promising, because I think that's one of the things that's worked for some of the other clubs that have like, quote unquote, restarted. Not every club. It's not what Philly does, not what Columbus does, but I think that's the right way to go for clubs like that. And so if I was a fan of that team, I'd be stoked. And as Joe mentioned, you don't have much to be stoked about, so you might as well take what you can.
We'll talk Chicago a little bit later in the show. For now, let's take a quick break. I have two more GA Cup questions for you, Goss, and then we'll talk CONCACAF Champions Cup and the MLS weekend that was. Back soon.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. David Goss, two more questions for you. First one, which MLS Academy do you think has improved the most in the time that you've been covering GA Cup?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say Seattle. I think Seattle's probably the like clean standalone one, with Columbus now approaching. Because I think once I started, when I started, Dallas and Red Bulls were already committed. NYCFC have been since the first day. So it would be Seattle. You could argue Philly's in there, because Philly, it like happened all of a sudden with the YSC thing and then changed. But I would say Seattle's the one that like conventionally did it of... It was an afterthought of our club, and now we are consistently pushing players through, developing good players, and at a high level. And they are one of the clubs as well that went from recruiting outside their area to really only focusing on their area. But I think Columbus, New England, and Orlando are like the next three coming up.
I'm happy to hear that about Philly. I may have told this story on the show before, but I was at like one of the United Soccer coaching conventions once, and I was watching this La Liga manager who'd come over to do sort of different lessons about positional play and possession play. And he had a lot to cover in a very small amount of time. And he kept getting frustrated because the Philadelphia Union Academy players that he was using were not able to do like the basic things he was asking. So he'd be like, okay, now just pass it through that gate. And then they would pass it wide. And he'd be like, okay, let's try it again. Now pass it through the gate. And it kept not happening. And so I think he only ended up getting through like half of it afterward. And you can tell coming away from that one that he was maybe a little bit whelmed to underwhelmed by the youth products there. So I'm glad that they have come on leaps and bounds. That makes me very happy. Guys, my second question for you. When the president of the United States does the State of the Union, it's always like the State of Our Union is strong is how that begins. If you were going with the State of Youth Soccer in America is ... how would you finish that one?
The strongest it's ever been.
Okay.
So I don't know if the word strong is correct, because the scale is different of like you're comparing against other countries and what other people are doing. But I think we're at a peak. I think it will continue. I hope it will continue. There are things that need to happen for it to continue. But I think we are in a place where we have the most good coaches that care about players that are learning how to coach the game the right way, having touch points with the most players who are being put in the highest level environments and being cared after in a strong way. There is like so much more to do, but it's better than it was 5 years ago. It's better than it was 10 years ago. And it's better than it was before any of this stuff existed. So I think it's really promising. And like when you come to these things, you talk about, oh, I don't know if this guy's a superstar, this guy's not. There are MLS starters across the field. There are USL starters across the field. There are players who will go and bounce around and a Henry Wingo, right? And find their level in Europe and find the right club or in South America or in Central America. Like there are so many good soccer players and there's so many spots for them to fall into. And then you've got the most rolls of the dice you've ever had, which is I still don't think you create a Gio Reyna. I still don't think you create a Vinicius, right? Those are outliers. But now they're going to be in a professional environment at 14 because that exists. And so their development, their pathway, and then whenever they get there, it's more likely to happen and it's more likely to pop out the right end and it's more likely to be at its highest peak that it can be than it ever was before.
Why are we not likely to create those players? Is it because they're just so naturally
Anyone does. Like, I think that's natural gift.
Okay.
So there's levels you can help affect, but like what Bukayo Saka can do is not taught. What Vinicius can do, what Jude Bellingham can do, that's not taught. And you teach every player the same and no one else can do it. Right? So like when we're talking about LeBrons and Messis and stuff, you're talking about development and coaching, but I think there are those players that are outliers to that. And you try and add all the stuff, how to play against the ball, how to manage set pieces, how to manage your body, nutrition, like all stuff like that. But I'm just saying those players exist in the US and Canada. Alphonso Davies is an example of that. They will come through when they come through. I don't think there's a button you can push to create players like that.
It's a weird thing in my mind that, like, I think it was the Malcolm Gladwell Outliers book when we all sort of still liked Malcolm Gladwell as a collective whole, who kind of like, I think his argument was that there are people that we assume are outliers, but actually had specific like legs up or specific things that allowed them to be who they were. Like Bill Gates having access to a computer when no one else did allows him to be the Bill Gates that we know today. And I do think when you look at those outliers from a footballing standpoint, almost always in contrast to say Hollywood, Nepo babies in soccer are not the worst things, because it does seem like every kid I've ever seen who could ball had a parent, a mom or a dad, who also was very good and played at a high level and played with them from the time they could walk. And so they were already, you know, doing keepy ups when they were 8 years old. And I do think probably Gio Reyna is an example of that, somebody who grew up with parents who played at a high level. You learn from them young, you learn the game young, and it does put you into that next level. So to your point, Goss, I do think there are probably things that are not quite intangible, but happen at a very young age. So basically, parents, your takeaway should be, if you want your kid to go play in Europe, you should be training them from birth. That's the takeaway.
But I'm not trying to knock a kid here at all. Gio's younger brother, Joe, is a really good soccer player. All of the academy games I've ever seen. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the games I've ever seen, he's been one of the two best players on the field. But he's not Gio Reyna. Right, there are things that Gio's capable of that are natural.
Says that to him because regularly,
I have zero idea, and I don't even want to think about anything in that world.
All right,
but like, so two players from the exact same background. One is Kevin Sullivan and Quinn Sullivan. Quinn Sullivan is Joe. He's a legitimate MLS starter. Yeah, at this
he hit
age, right?
He hit a 50-yard Rabona clearance out of his own box on Saturday. It was amazing.
But Kevin is capable of things he's not capable of. So there are those things that I think are unteachable in some players that get to that level.
What's Cade Cowell's brother's name?
Chance.
Chance.
Chance Cowell. Also, to go back before, Goss, the NYCFC player that you said earlier, Jersey Shore, what's the kid's name?
Johnny
Shore. He definitely sounds like he should look like Cade Cowell does. Like, he is the name that Cade Cowell needs to have to fully embrace his high school surfer villain mode.
Johnny Shore was the original name of Patrick Swayze's character in Point Break, and then they changed it. I'm almost positive.
He's got more of the vibes like his parents work for Price Waterhouse and that type of stuff. Also, I that was such a hard it. Long Island water all of a sudden.
All right, let's talk about a different continental competition. Let's talk CONCACAF Champions Cup for a moment. We're recording this on Tuesday, April 2nd. We successfully avoided any sort of April Fool's things. Joe, we've got Columbus versus Tigres this evening, as well as the New England Revolution versus Club America. And then tomorrow, we've got Miami versus Monterrey and Herediano versus Pachuca. How are you feeling about our MLS sides still alive in this competition?
Real bad. Taylor is the answer. So I'll start with the Revs because they're all the ones that unfortunately warrant the least discussion. Mm. They're a bit of a train wreck right now. Enjoyed a bye week, which is cool for them. They needed it. They are still really, really struggling. They're one of the teams in MLS without a win. They're one of just two teams along with the Seattle Sounders. They are just not a very good team right now. The help around Carlos Heel hasn't been there. They don't have elite goalkeeping anymore. And that was what, along with Heel and a couple of the other pieces around Carles Heel, propelled them to the Shield back in 2021. This is a much, much different team that has a lot of self-reflection and roster tweaking, in my opinion, at least, still left to do. I think the Revs are going to be in real trouble. Then I look at Columbus.
I know you wanted to take pro argument for the Revs.
Yeah, please. Go ahead.
Well, when you have a player like Tommy Mack associated to your club, you've always got a shot. He's the he's the American Juniac, and, you know, in competitions like this, a lot of times quality shines above.
What a guy. What a guy. What a yes and, David. I'm going to look at Columbus now. They're up against Tigres today. Now, I think Columbus are still probably the best team in Major League Soccer right now. They're falling behind a little bit in the Eastern Conference standings. That's fine. It's all good. They're going to be fine this season. They're still a very, very good team. You look at how they play, how comfortable they are with their identity. All that stuff tracks. Tigres, ridiculous. Always very, very strong in this competition. Well, one of the giants in this region. That's a hard draw. It's about as hard as they get. And then you add the fact that we might not see Cucho Hernandez on the field for the Columbus Crew. And this is what we joked about a little bit in the intro. He did not play, was not involved at all in the Columbus Crew's game over the weekend, a 2-2 draw against Nashville SC. And when asked why, Wilfer Nancy said after the game, team policy. And when asked, like, sort of to elaborate further, did nothing. And then when asked if he was going to play Cucho on Tuesday today against Tigres, he said, quote, we'll see. So, we don't know exactly what's going on there. It doesn't seem like this is Cucho, like, wanting a transfer or anything along those lines. It really does seem like he broke some sort of rule internally, and the punishment's now being handed down, and Nance chose not to shine too much of a light on that stuff. I don't really blame him for that. We have, and I mentioned this yesterday, we have some priors on this, which is Darlington Nagbe sort of going through a very similar treatment. And folks asked at some point last year why Darlington Nagbe didn't play, wasn't in the team, and didn't start. Maybe that's what it was, didn't start. And Nance said Darlington knows why, and so didn't really get into anything. So this is not totally uncharted waters, but you could not have this happen at a worse time. Like, the Crew are, I think, MLS's best threat to go out and actually win CCC this year. Miami are sort of tattered and torn right now, and we'll talk about them in just a second. But this is the Crew's chance to go out and do something really, really special in C-Cubed. And if they don't have Cucho, I genuinely do not think they can beat Tigres across two legs.
Yeah, it seems like a worst-case scenario in terms of timing. And you also talk about a club where Supporters Shield is an ambition, MLS Cup repeat is an ambition, and you look at the history of what's happened to teams that have tried hard in this competition or gone deep. And I think for teams, like, yeah, you go into a game, you're committed. But in terms of the overall build of the club and, like, what you're focused on, and I talked to Julian Gressel about this a little bit last week, and he's like, well, you can see it in the lineups for teams. Like, that's kind of all he would say when I'm like, how do you really genuinely focus on all these things? And, like, everyone's going to lie to us out loud, but, like, secretly, what are you guys talking about? There's clearly focuses for teams. If you don't have Cucho on Tuesday night, it's hard to see that you win against Tigres. And then it's hard to see the team decide, yeah, let's put the focus on the second leg in Monterrey at altitude at El Volcan against this team. And so then all of a sudden it's like almost over before it started for this team, which, as Joe mentioned, would suck as a neutral because they're the best shot. But they are in a spot where it's not just Cucho. Rudy Camacho comes off injured. I think Sean Zawadzki came off injured as well. So they are in a really tough bind, and it is going to test the concept of, like, Wilfred Nancy can get more drops out of any lemon squeeze, blah, 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 than anyone else could with the same pieces. It's like four metaphors combined, or was it just
three? I liked
it,
though. No, I thought it was good.
Even without Cucho, of the three teams we're discussing for Major League Soccer, do you all feel like Columbus have the most potential? Could you see the Revs bringing a surprise? Could you see Miami bringing a surprise?
I don't see the Revs winning either of these games against Club America. I think they are as good as done in CCC right now. If there is no Cucho Hernandez for the Columbus Crew, and if there is a Lionel Messi for Inter Miami, I think it flip-flops. And we don't know if there's going to be Messi against Monterrey. They play on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time in Miami. He's been training with the team as of today, so he trained, and we know that. So it feels like there's a real chance we see some of Leo Messi against Monterrey, but how much, it's just really hard to say. He missed the international window, didn't go out on international duty with Argentina, which was the plan back in March. So he has legitimately been struggling for fitness. We don't know exactly what's going to happen there. Miami had a fascinating game with NYCFC over the weekend in that they created a bunch of chances with a really, really weird lineup. Like, they were pretty clearly the better team against NYC, but the lineup did sort of come back to bite them. And the lineup from Tata Martino was somewhat forced by injuries and lack of availability. It was a 4-3-3 from Miami and Tata, and it was Sergio Busquets as a left-sided center back. Now, I'm sure this has happened before. I never remember. I can't recall seeing Sergio Busquets play as a center back ever in his entire career. I'm sure it has happened before. But he was playing at center back, and Ryan Saylor was playing at right center back. They're basically like five or six down on the depth chart at center back right now. Like, there's no reason you shift Sergio Busquets back a line unless you're really, really struggling. No Sergi Christoph, no Nicolas Freire. You're missing Ian Frey. You're missing a bunch of guys in that spot. Tomas Aviles was questionable coming in, and he was on the bench for them. Like, they're really, really hurting in the middle of the back line. We're also seeing a shift at right back where you have Cello. I'm going to butcher the last name, so I'm just going to go with Cello for now. Coming in for Boca Juniors as the DeAndre Yedlin replacement. Argentine looked capable, doesn't look like an elite defender, but looks very, very strong on the ball. It sort of helps Miami lean even further into the we are just going to smother you with possession because we can't defend, which is almost always going to be the case. And I kind of admire them going further down that pathway because it might make them better. Along the way, there's just a lot up in the air. And you could see that against NYC, the goal that NYCFC scores comes in Sergio Busquets, the left-sided center back in a back four, goes in is like all the way out on the left touchline, trying to go ahead and sort of play out a little bit. And then NYCFC win the ball and knife right into the space that he leaves behind, and it's 1-1. So there are issues here, but Miami, because they're Miami and they have a couple of the best players in this region and the best player who's ever lived, maybe available, you just can't count them out.
So I'm definitely coming at this from a position of ignorance. What, I'm going to just preface that before I ask this question. My sort of assumption is that if you have Messi in there, Messi starting, Messi is a difference maker. I don't
hot
you
take
heard it here
sizzling.
First. Hot take. If you lose Messi, if he is not able to play, even if you have a full squad elsewhere or around him, it feels like that becomes the big question mark of like, what then do you do? How do you play? Do you all feel like Tata Martino has an approach that works if you have everyone fit except for Messi? Or do you feel like that's something they are still figuring out?
Not even close. Part of it's okay. Structural. The way the league is built is like DPs are such a large part of who your team is that when they're out, there's no replacement. And the other part that's structural is like they're trying to do this thing, which is like, we're going to be Barcelona in a salary cap league. And so the holes and deficiencies in their team are so large that if not overwhelmingly great at what they do, the good, being good at it, might actually leave them open to losing to teams that aren't even playing that well. And there's clear openings for teams of how to play them and what you want to do. So I don't think they have a clear idea. Part of that goes back to injuries of like they're so far down in some of these positions that I could be wrong. That the center backs could be good to great. And when they're together and structured and have played together a little bit, it might all look good. I don't know if that'll ever happen this season. But we have not seen it yet. And then you go to this matchup. And a Monterrey team that's healthy and fit and fine, and a Monterrey team that is not overly philosophical about how they want to play, but solid up the spine, match-winning talent in midfield, a legit finisher in transition in Bertarame, Sergio Canales, who has pulled the strings since day one for this team. Like, this is a situation, I think, where what the Red Bulls sort of did, it could look like that for Monterrey.
Joe, any thoughts on that one? Anything you'd like to see Tata try that you think could be interesting if they don't have Lionel Messi?
I don't think he has any other option than just try to put as much talent on the field as possible, which is hard to do right now because the injuries are piling up in a major way. Even outside of center back, you're missing Federico Redondo. In midfield, he's going to be out for this game. That's a huge blow because he is a high-level player. Instead, we saw Yannick Bright, who's a rookie, at the defensive midfield spot, David Ruiz, who's 20 years old, Honduran international, young player still, and Diego Gomez, 21 years old. Like, it's going to be young, and we're probably going to see Busquets back in that group, but you just got to get as much talent on the field as you possibly can because this team doesn't have the tools, doesn't have the time to change in training either, to go out there and like, pull out a plan B. Like, there is no plan B for this team. It is control games by having the ball, and when we lose it, we know we're going to be in trouble, but we believe in our attacking firepower to the point where we'll go out there and win 4-3 instead of 1-0 because they just literally cannot win 1-0 games.
So we've got, as I said, it's Columbus Tigres, Revs, Club America, Miami Monterrey, Herediano versus Pachuca. I don't really expect either one of you to be experts on Herediano. It sounds like you are both kind of leaning towards there being a strong possibility that we have four Liga MX teams advancing from these fixtures.
Yes, I would say that's more likely than less likely. I don't know where you're at, Goss.
I would say at a minimum, I think it's likely we don't see an MLS team in the next round. I'm not going to speak for Herediano. I'm not going to bring them into our problems and our issues. You know, I don't want to put that evil on them. Can I throw one thing out there? I'm pretty sure that, what was his nickname? The Chivas USA / Torres, Chivas USA, ended up at Atlanta United, Houston Dynamo.
Ringo?
Kubo?
No, not that Torres. Came from Chivas.
Kubo Torres, Mexican. Is that not who we're talking about?
Yeah. What did he go by, Kubo?
Kubo, I think, yeah.
No, he did he go by Kubo?
I don't know. Where are you going with this, David?
He's on this Herediano
great
team.
Stuff.
Let's
great
go.
Stuff.
Yeah, that's where I was going with it.
I was correct. It is Kubo Torres. Boom, sorry.
Okay.
On that note, let's take a quick break. We'll come back to talk MLS weekend that was back shortly. Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. Joe Lowry coming to you to ask a very basic question to start us off with this one. Who impressed you the most this weekend? Who's the team that maybe we've talked about or we haven't talked that much about, but who stood out to you as being quite good on the weekend?
I was really impressed by what RSL did, to be honest, against St. Louis. This is an RSL team under Pablo Mastroianni. They sort of cleaned house around him over the offseason. The idea, and from what I've heard, is like we want this team to evolve tactically, and we like what Pablo brings us as a manager and how he leads, but we want to help bring in some fresh ideas. And we are seeing that right before our eyes. There's been this trend around MLS this year, and I think it's fascinating, and I hope to dig more into it as the year goes on. of seeing number nines, and I'm thinking about Chicho Arango for RSL. I'm thinking about Joseph Martinez, who plays for CF Montreal, just in case you forgot, and Raul Ruy Diaz for the Seattle Sounders. There's been this trend of, instead of playing those guys as actual number nines, like line leaders through the middle, the central attacking focal points, they've been popping up in half spaces, like not just by accident, not just roaming around the field during the run of play, but in this very deliberate positional setup from their respective managers. That was the case for Arango. It's been the case the last two weekends for RSL and Chicho Arango. Arango, of course, with a hat trick against St. Louis City over the weekend, but we saw him in a very, very similar position in RSL's 2-1 road win against Vancouver two weekends ago now. And I think it's a really interesting look, because these guys, very, very skilled relative to a lot of the players around them, certainly have a talent advantage over a lot of opposing center backs in MLS. We're seeing like more vertical threats through the middle for those teams. It was Anderson Julio that was playing really as the nine in possession for RSL over the weekend. And Arango almost operating underneath, not as this chance creator, but really more as like a second forward. But it's not a second forward in a two. It's a auxiliary forward in a front three. It's a really interesting look. And I wouldn't have come up with it myself, to be honest. I would have thought you have Arango, you have him lead the line, you put a couple of playmakers underneath him, and you go from there. But whatever Pablo Mastroianni and his coaching staff have found very much seems to be working. St. Louis City couldn't deal with Arango. They struggled to deal with the different elements of that RSL front three, where you've got Arango kind of drifting a little bit and looking for space as that off-ball runner. You have Anderson Julio playing up top, stretching the line. And you've got Matty Crooks playing underneath in the half spaces as well. Like, those are skillful players. Then you talk about Andres Gomez coming off the bench. You talk about Diego Luna, who gets an assist. You had Fidel Barajas with a two assists last weekend, or I guess in that Vancouver game I mentioned. This RSL team still missing Pablo Ruiz. I don't think their goalkeeping and sort of their back six is going to be enough for them to be a legitimate trophy threat this year. I'm willing to be wrong on that, though, because of how promising and fun and more disciplined the attack looks. I like a lot of what RSL are doing. They're just a team that sort of makes sense right now. Even though I don't fully understand the Arango in the half spaces or Ruy Diaz or Joseph Martinez, like in general, there's a lot of talent on the field, especially in the attack, and the pieces sort of seem to fit together and are generally occupying roles that you look at and say, okay, yeah, that tracks. Like I mostly get that. And that's a pretty darn good recipe for a successful soccer team.
I think it's fascinating too, Joe. I've been talking with a couple coaches here about soccer ideas and like what they think is coming and what they like. I think there's a lot of coaches that like to press out of a two. And so even if you're a quote unquote 10, like we have seen at times when Cincinnati has played with one forward and Lucho goes high, like you're going to set up against the ball with two up top quote anyway. So yeah, if you make the other nine a 10 in some setups, they're going to be a second nine anyway. And I think you have a lot of teams, which we've seen everyone steal from Pep and then move on from there. You add another defender a lot of times into midfield, or you add two if you're playing with wingbacks who come high. And so like then there's freedom for that center forward to come and find the game anyway. And so rather than jam a 10 on and kind of get stuck in the same spaces, or I think like you mentioned, maybe you don't have a talented 10. So instead of wasting the spot, you put a second forward on the field. There are players filling in midfield behind them where they don't have to do the same role that has existed all the time. So I think it's really interesting as well. I think it's interesting because MLS is one of the rare leagues that like uses true tens like we all grew up watching, and Raquel May style players and all that type of thing. A lot of leagues and teams don't. And it might be getting harder to recruit those players because they don't exist anymore. And then you look at a situation where you already have good nines on your team. How can you get them more touches as well? Because what we saw, let's go all the way back, outlier, but first game of the season, RSL on the road at Inter Miami. Chicho touched the ball, what, 15 times in that game? Maybe. So it's like, if he's your best player, even if it's not the right spots, is it worthwhile to get him to touch the ball more often and let him be involved and let him decide, let him affect the game? For RSL, it works really well too, because both of the wingers want to come inside and create.
Yeah.
So like he can still go and be the nine, which was what we saw in Diego Luna's cutback. We saw Fidel Barajas do it a few weeks ago on the ball to Anderson Julio. So it seems like an interesting solution. I'm not going to be shocked when other teams try it. I wouldn't be surprised if like Abu Penza did it in games where Lucho's not available, instead of trying to just fill in another player in that role. And I think a lot of it comes from Cucho and like the way Columbus used Cucho over the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. The touches point is a really, really good one. Gossett looked up the numbers on FP Ref. Arango's averaging 5 more touches per 90 minutes this year than last year. Really still small sample sizes for him in both of those seasons because he comes in midway through last year. But that does speak to your point about, okay, we believe this guy's talented and he can influence the game. Let's get him on the ball. And I don't know. I'm generally encouraged right now by some of the roster builds and some of like the tactical approaches that we're seeing around the league. And I'm going to invoke the name of the LA Galaxy here in a positive way, which you know David Goss hates, but I'm going to do it anyway. The Galaxy, Atlanta, even with Garth Lagerwey going there, you look at these squads and they're flawed. Absolutely, they're flawed. But do the pieces generally make sense where they're positioned on the field? Absolutely, they do. Atlanta, like, absolutely just destroy the Chicago Fire 3-0 at home on Sunday, the only Sunday game. Yakimakis gets a goal. Diarra gets a couple of goals off the bench. Like, it just fits. Almada is the 10. There are competent central midfielders behind him in Bartosz Slis and Tristan Mayumba. You have two high-level wingers in MLS in Jhande Silva and Sabah Lobjanice. And then you have a functional back four. And goalkeeping, I don't know what's going on with Brad Guzan and Josh Cohen, but Guzan continues to start, and it wasn't a problem over the weekend, so that's all fine. Then for the Galaxy, you got Gaston Brugman back in this team. He started the last couple games. You have Mark Delgado doing some of the dirty work in midfield. You have Mickey Amane, new right back signing that Goss maligned before the season starts, just to remind everybody. You have him starting on the right side of the back four, doing a bunch of different stuff. We can find the receipts, David. It's fine.
No, 100% exists.
And then you look at the front line. Yep. I'm not going to do that, though, because I'm too lazy for that. But then I look at the wingers, and Joseph Painsil, again, great first name, just an incredible soccer player. Like, he's incredibly good at this game. And Gabriel Peck floating around the attack a little bit, too, on the opposite winger at times, and this is where the goal against Seattle came from. It came from Ricky Puig, Joseph Painsil, and Gabriel Peck all on the right side working together because they have elite talent. Like, those players are just so much better than the worst defender in your back line. Like, they are. They're going to find him, and they're going to start to exploit it. And we're seeing more and more setups, at least among some of these big clubs, or among a team like RSL that seems to be doing things in a smarter way. We're just seeing stuff that actually seems to work and make sense. And DC and Montreal deserve credit for this. And I don't know, it feels in some ways like a bit of a rebound from last year, maybe, where it felt like there weren't a lot of standout teams in this league. And I don't think we're all the way there yet. But I'm just enjoying watching some of these teams do stuff that seems to fit this year.
How much concern do you have about the Galaxy's defense, Joe?
I've got real concern. Like, none of that has really changed. Two things on that do form positive data points. We need, like, 20 more, but a little bit of a start. They beat Seattle 1-0, which I talked about Miami not being able to win games 1-0. I don't think the Galaxy can really do that either, but they did hold against Seattle, and so they have one thing there that we can point to. Jordan Morris had a really nice chance at the end of this game, and he didn't finish, and if that looks differently, then we maybe talk about this game a bit differently. But in general, the Galaxy, I thought, did an okay job of sitting back and trying to compress space for most of that second half after they went up early. So that's a good sign. And then I don't have the name in front of me, but I know there's a young Colombian center back who's coming to this squad, Tom reported yesterday. And so they're actively trying to improve the defense. When Jalen Neal comes back, that'll hopefully be a bit of a help as well, though TBD on that stuff. I am concerned about the Galaxy's defense, but my thesis on this team right now, especially in a weak Western Conference, is that the attack is so good. And it looks like it might genuinely be the best attack in MLS, or right up there with Miami and Columbus. Like, it's that good. The attack looks so promising that, unlike most teams in MLS, they really can't afford just to open up and go out there and try to outscore teams because they have the firepower to execute. So I'm concerned about the defense. I think it probably still holds them back from being like a Shield contending team or maybe like a team that's going to win a trophy in an obvious way. But if you fast forward to December, mid-December, and you tell me the Galaxy won a trophy this year, I wouldn't be shocked.
When you talk about roster builds you enjoy, Joe, would you say that you love what the Chicago Fire have done, or you just really like what the Chicago Fire have done?
So I want to ask Goss this question.
I don't understand this question.
No.
I don't
know. So the answer is I don't like what the
just
Fire have done
to
whatsoever.
Force Joe into a corner. That's mostly what I'm doing.
I just saw, and maybe I'm looking in weird spots, I don't know. I feel like over the offseason I saw a lot of praise for what the Fire did with their transfer moves and all that stuff, and I just don't get it. Like, I think Hugo Kuipers is a very, very good number 9. You watch him, his speed of play, his movement off the ball, like, it's all there. What's missing for him is somebody to give him the ball. Like, that is just such a glaring, obvious issue.
What do you
for
think about Kellen?
I don't think Kellen Acosta is, like, an exceptional soccer player at anything. And, David, you know this because we've talked about this before. I don't get the Kellen Acosta hype. I think he's a fine starter. He doesn't move the needle on a team that can't create chances whatsoever. Like, we're still seeing Gaston Jimenez. Like, if the point of bringing Count Acosta in was to have him play the eight, or like have him play in a double pivot next to somebody else who's going to also do that stuff, we didn't solve any problems in Chicago by still having Gaston Jimenez in the team. All the moves were fringe moves, and that includes going out and breaking your club record fee. I know I said I was going to let David talk, and I'm sorry. I know that includes going out and spending $14 million or whatever it was on a very, very good in prime number nine. And you're just wasting it. You're completely wasting it right now. The summer transfer window could be a really big moment, and everything could turn on its head in the summer when somebody who can create chances from out wide or give them another goal threat to take pressure off Kuipers. All that stuff I think could happen and maybe even will happen in the summer. But man, they're treading water. Like, the Fire are completely treading water. Nothing has changed for this team in a relevant way.
So, just because we're doing a receipts thing on this episode, clearly. I picked Chicago to finish 12th in the East preseason.
Well done.
So Joe had him 5th. You had him 11th. Right.
Didn't he have them playing Chivas USA in the final?
I did have that.
So receipts, we can go find it. So I don't disagree with anything you said. I think not all of the moves, because I got to go back through it all then. But like, I think Kellen makes sense. I think Kuipers makes sense.
I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Agreed. So I think the positivity is it was closer in the direction of making sense than it has. Over the last few years. Why did they re-sign Gaston Jimenez?
That is the most faint praise possible.
Why did they bring in half of the defenders they've brought in? Like, all of these things they've done have made no sense. And this one, like, was fine. And if they do fill the DP spot that is now empty in the summer with a genuine chance creator, or even like a Pecker Painsill, right? Who's not like a high leverage 10, but a guy who could create his own chances and probably create for Kuipers. They're better. I would guess that that's some level of the positivity. Gaston Jimenez and George Heights clearly own something that allows them to do whatever they want and still get new contracts. And maybe that will never go away.
Yeah. And one more positive note for the Fire, because there's a lot of... a lot of reasons to be bummed out about what's happening. So Tom Bogert and Paul Tenorio reported earlier, this was back in March, that there are sort of changes afoot that could be coming midseason in MLS that would allow teams to not only sign three senior DPs, but to have three senior DPs and three U22 initiative players. Right now, if you have like all your U22 initiative slots filled, you can't have three senior DPs. One of them has to be younger. One of them has to have a smaller cap hit, whatever it is, right? Chicago are a team that would really benefit from this rule because they have three U22 players. They have some of their homegrowns on those U22 deals to make them cap friendly, to keep them around, to be able to pay them a bit. And they also have the ability to add one more, like, big time DP. Before, it was going to have to be a young player or someone who like doesn't maybe move the needle all that much, more of a TAM guy. Now they can go out, if this rule gets passed and if we see this implemented before the summer window, which feels like a real possibility given what folks around the league are talking about now that some of the reporting's come out. That is like maybe a season-defining move and a season-defining rule change for the Fire. Why this rule change is coming in midseason is absolutely beyond me. I think that's a little absurd, frankly. But as it relates to the Fire, this could be really, really helpful and could be the difference between them being 11th or 12th, guys, like we have them, and being 7th in the Eastern Conference and winning the first-round playoff series and going from there.
If they get a wide open DP spot and they use it on like Granit Xhaka just to like see if they can get Shaqiri to work or something like that, I will lose my mind.
Dude, he went out, Shaqiri, with Switzerland and scored a goal. Like, yeah, he's this guy. This guy is like incredible for Switzerland.
He's a world-class player.
It's bizarre. It's utterly bizarre.
So we just tell him he's playing for Switzerland when he's playing for the Fire, and that's
why they switched the jerseys back to red this year.
Mm-hmm. What we got to do is convince him that, like, Brian Gutierrez is Granit Xhaka. Like, Shaqiri's getting up there a little bit in soccer years. Maybe we can start, like, gaslighting him and tricking him into thinking that he's actually in Switzerland the entire time.
Make him do the Eagle celebration, Brian Gutierrez, and that should help him feel
like,
I can't see how that could possibly go wrong.
Joe,
and they
with
never
a little time
saw
left.
Taylor again.
I'll stay away from Serbia. Don't worry about it. Joe, with the time remaining, do you want to talk Colorado or should we spend some time discussing Orlando or either of our Texas teams? We've got a lot still to cover.
Let's talk Colorado, at least briefly. Okay. Huge win for them. Like a really, really nice 3 points against LAFC. They're now above LAFC in the table, by the way. Really, really encouraging performance to get Georgi Mihajlović on the ball more often in the final third, to have him influence the game from set pieces. I don't understand what Chris Armas is doing tactically. Like, I look at this team on talent and I think, okay, you cannot reasonably expect to differentiate yourself from other teams in the Western Conference or other teams in MLS with the players you have. Like, I don't think that's offensive to Colorado Rapids fans. I think everybody kind of accepts that. When you become a Rapids fan, you understand that you're not going to have the top-end talent that other teams around the league, at least some of them have, right? We can take that as fact. I look at this squad. Georgi Mihajlović is a good player. Is he a player who's going to help you win a trophy all on his own with the players that are around him here? No. So you have to find an edge somewhere else. And I look at the tactical approach for this team. Chris Armas, former Red Bull manager, I think, okay, this could work out really well, where the Rapids use their home environment, which is unique in Major League Soccer, to their advantage, and they go out and press the tails off of every other team in Major League Soccer, and they use transition and use their high-pressing wins as an opportunity to create chances. Because Georgia can do some of that, but there aren't enough there aren't enough other pieces in this team to make you feel good about winning games if you're not doing something different. And the Rapids have come in, and they've pressed, like, I don't know, around the edge of the top third of teams in MLS. Like, that's not helping them stand apart. They press more than most teams, but not like DC and not like the Red Bulls. And in possession, they're like the super blah kind of milquetoast team that doesn't really go vertical. They're not all that incisive on the ball. There's just not enough that's different about this team. So then I come back to, okay, well, if your tactics aren't really different in open play and your talent isn't different, where else can you look? And in my mind, there is like really only one more semi-major bucket to go out and find, and that is set pieces. And the Rapids score multiple goals on set pieces against LAFC. It's been the calling card of this team before with Jack Price's excellent service. He's now back in England. Connor Ronan's out with this team. Like, they're in a bit of hurt when it comes to their overall talent. But man, if you can get something from set pieces semi-often, like, that's enough to help you at least keep you in conversations. It's enough to get you into conversations like this one. Colorado beat LAFC. They score 3 goals. Like, there's a lot to like here. I'm still very, very concerned about the direction of this team. I don't think we've seen anything from Chris Armas to make me believe that he's a good coach. I've liked a couple of the tweaks this year, but I'm just not there yet. I don't really get their transfer strategy either. But man, it was nice to be a Rapids fan for what feels like maybe the first time in a long time over the weekend. That probably applies to a few other teams around MLS as well, but a good win doing something differentiable for maybe the first time all season.
Let me throw on top of this. So obviously huge to get Georgi goals and like get him going and get him excited. One of the things that I don't know how to calculate or process, and I didn't really think about it coming into the season, and then in watching, I went and checked last week. Georgi has already played double the amount of minutes in club soccer this MLS season than he did all of last year. Mm-hmm. Zach Steffen played 0 minutes last year. Sam Vines has already played more than he did all of last year. So, like, the expectation is they're the guys we saw leave, come back in, and maybe we should expect that it takes a little bit of more time. And even if there are spots where I would agree with you of, like, Georgie's not... he's not Triussi, he's not whatever you want to say, Ricky Pooj. Like, he's not one of those players. At his best, in sharpness, with all of them are good on the same day, like, they can beat a lot of MLS teams. They have not been that team yet, and I think their hope, if you're a Rapids fan, is that's part of it. Is like, they're all still, unfortunately as a unit, they're all still coming back to, like, being a full-time player, being sharp, being confident, all these things. I mean, Sam Vine's defending has been offensive at times, including on the David Martinez goal once again for like the third time this season. He was never that guy when he was in Major League Soccer. So your hope is he's just finding that again and it's not who he is now. And it might take a little bit more time than we thought, because we thought it would take time for a new coach to put new players and new tactics in. And it might also take time for these players to get back to who they were.
You mentioned Sam Vines is defending being offensive. Speaking of offending people, I said, should we talk about either of our Texas teams because Austin played Dallas this weekend? Yeah. But instead, I want to talk about Houston for a moment, because I did not see this coming at all. I did the season preview for them. I thought with Ace Ace missing the start of the season, I thought with the kind of threadbare squad such as it is, I did not feel like this was going to be a strong start for them. I thought they were maybe going to have a pretty strong fall back to earth. And yet here they are in the playoff spots and looking pretty good and getting the win this weekend. Yeah. How wrong was I, Joe? Are you surprised by this, or did you see some of this coming?
We're wrong together, Taylor, because if you told me there's a world where the Dynamo are averaging 2 points a game, missing Hector Herrera, I would be surprised. And if you told me, oh, also they're missing like four other players or have been at various points this season, we saw Sebas Ferreira start and score a goal, which is great because he missed some time earlier this season. They've been missing Nelson Quiñones, who's going to be out for the year. Like, this team has not been the one that we saw look so fun and promising at times last season. What they're doing is really, really impressive. Now, I don't know that this win against San Jose is one that we can take a whole lot from in and of itself. San Jose scored first.
Yeah, that team looked rough.
Yeah, they looked rough, and they ended the game with nine men. So yeah. There's like only so much you can do there. What I will say is the Dynamo's first goal, it's the Sebas Ferreira goal. San Jose are deep, like deep in their own half, deep in their own box. And that's been a real problem for the Dynamo. It's a problem for every team in the world. Like, breaking down low blocks is the hardest thing to do in soccer, blah, blah, blah. I say it all the time. And it is true. The Dynamo have been excellent breaking out of pressure, high pressure, in their own defensive third, great at building through midfield. When they get to the final third, it's been like, question mark, question mark, question mark, Coco, question mark. And Coco Karaske is a very good player. And so it's actually worked out okay for them. But you cannot survive on half space passes from Coco Karaske. You need something more. And the Dynamo got a little something more in this goal sequence. They actually played a little bit, some nice, quick, incisive play. I think Artur breaks into the box. There's a lot of good things that happen on that goal sequence. And if it can be similar to what I said for the Galaxy, like if it can be a data point in a string of, you know, 20 more of these that we see, they don't all have to end in goals. But if they end in real chances against low blocks, this Dynamo team is going to host a home playoff series in the first round. Like, they are, the tactical blueprint is strong enough in the first two thirds of the field. It's strong enough defensively out of their 4-4-2 mid block for them to actually go out there and grow some wings and do some really impressive things. If they can build on this and get Ace Ace back and have him sort of cook in this team as well, yeah, they could do some impressive stuff. So I'm still like generally cautious on Houston when it comes to their long-term trophy projections this year. But I mean, whether there's any doubt about them being a playoff team, like I think at this point, with how strong they've been, 2 points per game, missing all these players, like you've got to be really, really happy if you're Ben Olsen.
One of the things I'll say in both of your defense, and I don't even know where I had them, but let's assume I had them exactly where they sit right now in my preseason rankings, and you guys are both wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There was not 100% of a belief from, I think, the outside that without Ace Ace and the other pieces, that Ben Olsen would play the same way or have the same identity or have a clear identity. Because in his time with DC, he didn't, which, like, wasn't wrong. He played to his talent. He tried to get the results. They underspent. They were a tough team, but they made the playoffs a lot. I will almost always believe in an MLS team that sticks to a clear identity, because I think with the highs and lows of the season, you get a middle ground that will put you in a playoff conversation, even if you don't have talent. It is literally what the Red Bulls have been for at many stretches over 10 plus years. Houston in a different style, in a different way, but already that first St. Louis game was like, oh, whoa, they're going to try and play. They lose Quiñones, then they lose Sebas Ferreira. And Aliyu has been phenomenal. He's been, I think, one of the finds of the season. We chatted on our broadcast yesterday with Pat Onstad, and like I asked him a question about the injuries, and Aliyu was the first name he said of like, there's an opportunity for a guy like that. Like, guys like that have to see this as a chance. Sviatchenko's now back, which helps them stabilize. I think this team is going to be okay because they have that ID. They can bring talent in for that ID. I think Jan Gregus is a more useful player for them than he was for San Jose, because he fits into their identity. He is not a guy you want to be starting in MLS, probably, but he fits you better than he fit where he was before. And I think they're going to continue to be able to find players because of that. And I think now it gives you the confidence to be like, yeah, let's make some moves, rather than like, do we hold the fort to get Quiñones back next year, to get Ace Ace fully healthy and like just kind of restart next season? I think now there's enough confidence to go to ownership and be like, let us spend a little bit to reinforce this squad to be contenders this year, which maybe wasn't a selling point or a possibility at the beginning of the season, or we didn't think it would be. And that's going to help them be better than some of these teams. Let's put San Jose in there, who are like trying to figure themselves out week in and week out.
If they were going to spend a little money, Goss, where would you like them to spend it? What spot do you think needs the most strengthening to make a sustained playoff run?
I think it would be a high-level winger, chance creator, because it would, in fully healthy times, potentially open up Coco to come back inside if Ace Ace is still out, or move Bossy. Right. It gives you all flexibility. It also gives you a weapon that didn't exist last year. So when Ace Ace is back, you've now added to that while still covering without him and being a better team. And at this point, the money's in Sebas Ferreira, and I think Aliyu is a center forward, but can play both sides. So you already have enough players in there, which we didn't think you would, which is like, go make a move there.
Yeah, I think it's got to be left wing because of how Houston set up in possession. They don't really play with a right winger, and Goss, you alluded to this. It's Griffin Dorsey who overlaps high and wide on the right side from his fullback spot. And then Coco shifts inside to the half space, and he's looked great there this season. You go to the other side, and you have Bassi or Kolacek or somebody pinching inside into the half space, and it's been Aliyu out on the left wing, which I don't think he's super comfortable all the way wide. And Nelson Quiñones didn't give you anything in that spot last year. Like, he was basically a zero throughout the season. So any addition in that left wing spot who can give you a few goals and can create a few chances, when Ace Ace comes back, like, you have that central attacking threat. You're good through the right half space. Griffin Dorsey's distribution from the right wing has been sharp. And then you have finally something on the left when Franco Escobar stays deeper. Like, that left wing spot is very clearly, I think, the hole in this team.
Joe, that left winger, can they be right-footed?
Sure.
Chucky Lozano, how are we feeling about that? He's 28 years old. He's only like 20 million pounds or euros. Come on,
let's
get him on
this
team.
I thought you were going to say yourself. I was like, that was a very specific question.
Can he be right-footed? Can he have a beard?
Can he be named Taylor?
No, Chucky Lozano, I'd be down for it. I think he would very clearly elevate that attack. I mean, you could even aim a bit lower than Chucky Lozano, and this team would still probably, I think, be better. They might have finished higher, but I think their level would be better than where they were in 2023.
Could also save the money and just go get like a pain cell type player who, as expensive as he was, is probably cheaper than Houston trying to sign Chucky Lozano, who's like, oh, you know, PSV's like, oh, he's like a $5, $6 million player. And they're like, wait, where are you located? What's your population? Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, no, he's
Houston,
a $35 million player.
Yeah, our bad.
Yeah.
Joe, there aren't any like maybe sort of young American wingers who need consistent minutes to really kind of reach the next level that we would like to see them reach, are there?
Not that I can think of. Nobody whose last name would rhyme with Schmarrinson. I don't think that would.
Oh, that's the one. I was thinking Gio Reyna, but I don't think Joe wants to see Gio Reyna playing for Houston.
I'm done.
Pretty sure Gio Reyna doesn't want to see that.
Aesthetics are off the chart. I'm just done with Gio Reyna the winger. Like, I think we're done with that as a society.
Fine. Be that way. All right. On that note, I think we've gone plenty long on this one, but Joe Lowry, thank you for bringing all the thoughts and all the knowledge today.
And to you, Taylor.
And David Goss, thank you for joining us, my friend, from your Floridian hotel, was it?
Yeah. West Coast.
Thank you for nodding on this audio format. Yeah. I look forward to you going back to your swamp climate. Enjoy yourself out there. I hope the rest of the tournament is lovely, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
A Tyler Adams to you.
A strong Tyler Adams to you. Listeners, thank you all so much. Tyler Adams to you all as well. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. You gotta slice it.